Hi, I'm Philip Hong, and you're with Humble and Fred Legends, presented by the Retirement Sherpa, Geek Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bowdog, T2 Utility Engineers, and Big Ass Fans. Today on the program, we're going to go back to 2012, and since the election is coming up, I thought, why don't we hear from a venerable politician? We're going to hear from former Premier Mike Harris and his Humble and Fred connection. We're going to also hear from our friend Brian Jadan, who tried to run in a by-election and failed. As well, stories while stoned, kung fu farting, heinous, depressing song reviews, and some news with Kelly Kuchera. That's on today's show.
Oh, sorry, guys.
And now a very special episode of HumbleAndFredRadio.com.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
You're going to witness something. It's going to be quite the show here, folks. Humble and Fred Radio. I'm Humble, that strapping man across the Etobicoke Studios is Frederick.
Oh, thank you very much for that that description. You're a rugged man. I'm strapping. You're a rugged man.
It's ruggedandstrapping.com. And did you ever take care of the checks? I never asked you about that.
Yes, I did. There's a rush on the checks.
Okay. HumbleAndFredRadio.com is here and responsive to you and your internet needs for yet another day.
Yes. The checks, they said Humble and Fred Radio, com. They've been fixed.
I wanted love. I needed love. Most of all. Most of all. Someone said you love.
For 20 years, Humble and Fred destroyed commercial radio.
You're fired.
Back.
Are you kidding me?
To wreck the internet. It's HumbleAndFredRadio.com.
Oh, God help us.
Here are Humble and Fred.
That's some pretty slick stuff right there. Humble and Fred for another day, and I guess you're pretty excited. I'm pretty excited.
Absolutely. Mr. Mike Harris is our guest today. We're awaiting his arrival, and I'm looking forward to it because I'm an admirer of his, and I would like to, I want to catch up with the man. What's he doing these days?
Well, you speak for me when you say that. I mean, I don't know if we have, we shouldn't do it now. We should probably maybe weave the story when Mike gets here about how it came to be that Mike was so good to us. And how knowing him was actually beneficial to the Humble and Fred show of the 90s.
Yeah, and he's quite the man. I mean, he left his mark, good or bad, depending on your perspective, but he certainly was something.
Around the table, as always, the cast of characters, including the very bright and witty Mike Wixon.
Good morning.
The bright and witty and politically minded Brian Jadan. And no, you're not going to have to tell the story in front of Mike Harris. Well, we got a bunch of stuff to get through. We're going to get to actually, it's funny because a couple people emailed us asking to tell about the story of Brian Jadan, and I'd forgotten all about it. The thing he couldn't tell us when he was running for the NDP spot that was vacated by Jack Layton.
Yeah, I was fascinated by this because I'm thinking, what possibly could it be that he can't mention before the election, but he would be anxious to tell after the election, and we're about to get it.
Yeah, we're going to get that in a second. Uh-huh. And the reason I wanted Wixon in here for support is because if anyone can relate to what Brian did,
I'm not a cross-dresser. What are you talking about?
It's Cheech Wixon.
What?
Yeah, man.
Hey, Pete.
Hey-ho.
We got the email thing. Here we go. Thing from Pete.
Hi guys.
I think whenever we do this though, we should all chime in of it because it even makes it more effective. So here we go.
Hi guys.
That's what we'll play before emails.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that.
That should be pretty
email.
Cheeky monkey.
This guy says, your buddy was going to fill us in on the all candidates debate after the by-election. Any plans to have that conversation? This came from Grant Ridge, who says, I may have missed 3 shows out of the 112 out there. That would put me in the 97.3 club. No boom jokes, eh?
Hey, 97.3.
This guy's a writer.
Boom FM.
Boom.
Thanks, Grant Ridge. So Brian, set it up. You had been running in the riding that was left vacant by the death of Jack Layton,
right?
And what happened?
Went out to a debate one evening, and I left the office late, and I was running behind, and I had to make it out there, and I was hungry, so I grabbed a muffin at the house, and the muffin consequently had been made with marijuana butter. So I attended the debate.
But wait, it wasn't, by the way, he didn't do it. You're making it sound like you did this by mistake.
What do you want me to say?
You made the muffin on purpose with your weed butter. And you did that on purpose.
I did. I made it on purpose, and it was on my counter, and it looked lovely and enticing.
Yeah.
And it was, I was on my way to the debate, and I needed something to eat. So I took it, knowing full well that it, you know, it takes a good hour and a half, 2 hours for it to really kind of kick in. So I was at the debate, and by the time closing comments came around, I
you were
ready
high
to walk home. Yeah. Mm.
And people were coming up to him after the debate saying things like, "Hey, I really like what you're saying." He's like, "I can't talk right now." Yeah.
What did I say? Yeah. What did I promise?
Can you hear me talking, or is this just in my head, Matt?
So, Brian, yeah. So just to make this clear, you grab something to eat knowing full well that it was a marijuana muffin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all right. And you just thought you had enough time.
Oh, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was fine at the debate. It was just...
It wasn't for that stupid question period.
By the time closing statements came around, it was a little bit different.
Oh, that riding you ran in, you should have told everybody. You probably would have got elected.
I was... you know what? You're probably right. Mm-hmm.
They would have said, hey, this is a guy we can relate to.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
They would have said, can you give us your recipe? Yeah.
Well, considering...
For weed butter.
Well, what's some
is that, by the way? What is weed butter?
Well, you take...
I've had it.
Yeah, you take some marijuana, you take some butter, you take some water, you sort of let it stew in a slow cooker for a little while, and then it all separates. You separate the water from the butter, and then you use the butter to bake things with, and you ingest.
Is there no degradation? This is a serious question. Is there no degradation of the efficacy of the marijuana? Does it lose a generation, or does it become? Does it actually infuse the butter?
And the butter's infused, and it's a very cool thing.
Yeah, and I've asked this question, the question you just asked. I have asked people that have made this butter, and the thing is, it's like any other recipe. You get to know the balance to put in for the right buzz.
Yeah, it's not for me.
Well,
it's not for me.
No, really.
I don't tell.
No,
I don't
yours are money because we Brian brought. Was it the Rice Krispie cakes?
Yeah.
So you brought those in?
No, they were given to us.
No comment.
They were given to us by a listener.
Were they really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, thanks to you guys, I have no problem.
I can't remember who gave those to us. Do you guys not want
to? No, they weren't given to you. They were given to me.
Oh, okay.
And then he offered, and I never had one because I never go there because I'm not quite sure where it's going to take me, so I just avoid.
The good listeners. Kind of like you, Fred. I'm in the same boat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't. I just say no to it.
Sure you do. Well, I don't know. And then I must have been in another conversation where the night before you were going on one of your many vacations, you were trying to determine the correct formula for fucking Rice Krispie ingestion that would get you through.
By the way, four is too many.
I want to say for the record, though, Jatan and I saved you from getting like a, you know, thrown in the slammer because you were like, "Oh, I'll just take this on the plane." We're like, "No, you won't.
No,
they'll never smell them." Like, you open up the baggie and all it smells like smells like a head shop.
Let me ask you something. If you were, say you were going on a trip, say somewhere to Florida, and you were flying, would you take even a little particle of hash?
No.
No?
Never.
You wouldn't put it in a sock or in a little bag or...
No, just because... I mean, listen, I would say you're probably okay to do it, but just on the off chance that... And would you?
Well, no, because I don't live in that world to begin with, really. When you think about it, I'm just saying somebody that, you know, frequently smokes hash and, say, had a chunk and was going on a holiday, would you put just a little bit, you know, in your, with your cologne somewhere?
You know what I would say to answer that? I'd be more tempted to do it taking it there. I mean, I traveled back and forth across the border for years. I would take it in, but I wouldn't bring it back.
I told you that story about that girl that I grew up with in her early 20s. We were over their place one night, and she proceeded to tell us that she took some grass or marijuana to Jamaica.
What?
What?
Swear to God.
I took some sand. Me and my
buddy Doug looked at her and said, what? And she said, yeah. She said, you know, I didn't want to buy it down there in case I got in trouble. She took a little bag to Jamaica.
Wow.
When you think about it, right? That would be foolproof.
That's like
going into Jamaica. Exactly. Right. It's becoming.
She also took a big
penis with her.
I took it with me to Alberta.
She took a big one?
She also took a big penis with her. Why?
Really? That's just so racist.
Yeah.
Racial profiling. Kelly, what did you want to say, buddy?
It's gone.
The moment's passed.
You know, at that point, Fred, there's no point taking it because I've heard anywhere in the world, within 20 minutes, there is somebody, based on the amount of population that smokes or enjoys the cannabis product.
You would know. Here we go again. This guy says, all together now. Hi, guys, and Kelly. I'm another devoted fan, a listener, a follower, and a liker who has not only listened to every podcast since the fall, but have also sought out and listened to past one-off podcasts from past several years. I think this qualifies me as a 110%er. Here's how inside this guy says, always entertaining, especially hungover, referring to our hungover show. Keep up the good work. He says, P.S., have you guys ever thought of using the Facebook or that Twitter thing?
That was great.
I hear it's all the rage with the kids. Thank you, Michael Parker.
Hi, guys.
That's great the way that term is taking off, the 100%ers.
It's a reference, Brian, in case you weren't with us recently.
Or you were high, whatever.
Because you were on a cookie. See, I'm worried about... I'll tell you the truth. I'm one of those people that I prefer hash over weed because I get too high too quickly. But you guys have assured me that the ingestible high is actually more controllable, or would you?
I wouldn't say it's more controllable. Look, you're filling your lungs with smoke. That's bad enough as it is.
Sure it is.
Right? So...
Here.
You choose to...
Very hard.
Here.
So...
Down with weed and pot
the
and
thing
smoke.
About the... I can function a little bit better if...
Right.
I smoke a joint and I'm just like... And that's as good as it gets. Couch lock and a remote control, and it ends there.
Yeah, how about you, Mike? Are you able to function?
We dropped Brian off one day, and about an hour and a half later, I got a text message from him, and it said, just still walking.
He dropped me off on the Danforth. And
this is back in 71.
So I'm a bit baked, and I'm on the corner. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to walk up the street, and I'm going to catch the subway, and I'll get back to my place. Well, as I'm walking... I go to the market, I load up a basket, I'm walking, right? I've got like four watermelons in my basket. What the fuck am I doing with four watermelons?
How are you
going to
carry those?
Right? Like, that's exactly it. Right? Like four fucking watermelons in my basket. So okay, fine, I put the watermelons back.
You were thirsty.
Get back on the road. I missed every subway station between Broadview and Pape. So I finally remember that there's a subway station on Pape. I get on, go one stop over to my area, and then walk the two blocks home.
With the watermelon.
No watermelon. I left the watermelon at home. I bought grapes and berries.
That's funny.
I just hate that feeling. It's been years since I've felt that I've been drunk and I didn't like the feeling because I just don't do that anymore. The worst part is being high and not liking the feeling because there's no real way to dump it, you know? When you're younger, you got drunk and you didn't feel good or you were... too plastered, you just would make yourself sick. You can't do that with...
You gotta ride it out.
You gotta ride it out, and I just don't like that.
I'm not sure if you and I were having this discussion, but I was talking about it. I'd only tried... you know, acid a couple times in my mid-20s, and I didn't like the feeling. The first 6 to 8 hours were great.
Yeah.
Then about hour 10 or 11, you're going, okay, I just don't have the time to be high anymore. Like, when is this going to end? Yeah. It was like, you know, it started in the morning, and then at one point, I remember me and my friend, we were planning to go downtown. That took an hour because we were using bottle caps in the sand to represent us and downtown. That part was...
It's true, though.
We were like, okay, I'm this bottle cap and you're this, and then we'll go down on 11th Avenue. But that was fun. But about 7 p.m. that night, I was like, is
this ever? And that started, and I started to feel not very good. And both experiences ended where I was feeling, well, paranoid and upset, and just wanted it to be over, which is not how I get on weed. But I get closer to that, where you're like, hey, this is fun, and then you're like, okay, how am I acting?
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, I don't think anybody would deny this. If somebody approached you and said, okay, right now you need to be on the ball and more alert or back to straight, I think weed and hash allows you to do that a lot easier than, let's say, peyote or whatever, yeah, you know.
Or mushrooms.
Mushrooms or something like that.
Did you ever try that?
No.
Mushroom?
Not peyote. Oh, yeah.
Peyote.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, hey, Fred, remember when
you were in the Doors?
Yeah. I've tried.
Remember when Fred was in that Doors cover band?
But I've never.
Peyote?
Back in the early 70s, I mean, they were selling acid out of lockers in our high school for $2 a hit.
Yeah.
I never did acid, never did cocaine. Wow. I've never, ever done what they would term a chemical, although. What would you call them? Mushrooms somewhere?
No, that's organic.
Oh. Organic. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, all of that is to say, that's good that we got this discussion out of the way. Gentlemen, I'm going to have to excuse you.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Mike Wicks and Brian Jadam. Very nice, very nice, mm-hmm. very nice. Okay. Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Way to go, guys.
Bye, guys.
Say goodbye
bye
to my political guys. Career.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine. Paid for by the Government of Ontario.
If, like me, you're looking at bodog.eu/sports, whether you're a sports bettor, though, Fred, a horse racing fan, a poker or a casino player, you know, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, Hundy P's, go get it. They've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. Follow along as we do at bodog.eu/sports. Click on your favorite one, soccer, footy, or some basketball. Are you trying to beat the heat? Does your space feel stuffy? Huh? Does it? Man, wherever you may find yourself on this lovely day, then get a big ass fan. Big ass fans. Yeah. The fans are whisper quiet, master air movement machines, and they have one just about for any type of space. Not just 24 footers to cool down your barn or your facility. Have you seen the residential models, my friends? They are some sexy fans. Our friends at Big Ass Fans also have models with built-in sensors to adapt their speed to the surrounding environment based on the setting that you input. I think this part's genius. So you don't have to constantly turn your fan on and off to feel comfortable or fidget with the thermostat. And the fans are so effective at what they do, much like us. Wouldn't you say, Fred? Just say yes.
Very much so.
Yes. So effective. Like, you can even raise your thermostat set point on your AC to be higher and start saving money with these things. Make sure to visit bigassfans.ca and enter the code HUMBLE for discounts online. Call 844-9-BIG-ASS. That's 844-BIG-ASS. And mention Humble and Fred to get a sweet deal on some fans for your space. BigAssFans.ca.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
I don't know how it all began, but I remember when it began, Fred, that
yes,
you and I were in our studio in Brampton, and this gentleman came in with one other person.
Yes.
It was kind of a weird little thing. He was was he the leader of the opposition then, or had he not even?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes.
So he's the leader of the opposition. He came into our studio in Brampton, and it started this relationship that lasted the better part of 10 years, where through opposition, through his campaign, and through being the Premier of Ontario, whenever we asked him, strangely enough, Whenever we asked him, he would say yes.
Yes.
We must have had a phone call with him. I'm going to say a day after the election,
mm-hmm.
when he became the premier.
1995, yes. I think it was June of 95.
And a little while back, we had the notion that it would be fun to have him back on our show now that we broadcast on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
No, could you just grab him?
No, because we miss him, and we were wondering what he's up to. And just to catch up, Mr. Harris is getting a coffee right now. I'm just thrilled that he actually made it to the studio because... You know, people get confused coming here. Yeah. But I think he's too smart for that.
Or maybe he has people around him.
Yeah, he's got people.
You know,
people.
Might be able to make the connection. So please welcome back to our show.
Oh, there he is.
The
look at that.
The former Premier of Ontario, Mike Harris.
Very good to see you. Sir.
Hey, Pro, how are you?
Good to see you.
Stepped up from... Sir now.
That's right. It was always sir. It was always understated that, you know, we had such a... respect and held you in high esteem. Welcome to what we're doing now. You don't have to wear them if you don't want to.
I appreciate the invitation and I appreciate the welcome. What the hell is it you're doing now?
Well, Mike, you know what?
Here, why don't you fix those for Mike? And if you really want to have headphones, you can.
No, I don't need them. Do I?
Yeah. No, really. Well, we were in the radio business for a long time, and then it just got to the point where we were no longer welcome. In that end of it. So we created this. Because, you know, this is the internet. This is where it's going, eh? Everything.
Is this it for everything?
Yeah.
I know. God. It seems underwhelming at first, and then it goes downhill from there.
No, but, you know, maybe government should all be done on the internet. The whole thing. You get rid of Queen's Park. You get rid of, you know, you save a lot of money.
Well, you know, if you want to be serious for a second, if there was some way that you could do, you could figure out a way to... get voting done online, you would maybe get some people turning out on, you know, less than 50, or more than 50%.
Yeah, and some of the geekies would really figure out how to stack the ballot box. It works for me if it's on my side. I don't like it on the other guy's side, though.
We'll get to politics in a bit.
All right. Listen,
great, by the way.
I'm feeling good. Everything's fine. You know, I try to shun the media, except just about every day somebody says something or I read something in a paper, and life's good. Kids are fine. Wives are fine. What the heck?
Wives? Have the laws changed here in Ontario?
Well, I'm still paying.
Yeah, you and me both, brother.
No, and we really appreciate that because people kept saying to me over the past week, he's going to come on your show, but he doesn't really seem to do a lot of media.
Yeah. No, I try to stay out and leave the politics for the active politicians and whatnot. You know, I've entered a new light. Doesn't mean, you know, I not try and help raise money and help the party federally, provincially. I'm going to Ottawa today for the budget, see what that brings us. And so, well, I stay in touch. You know, active politics is for others now, and I don't do media. They're very little. And you guys are the except. This is not media, is it?
Well, I was going to say, even when you did our radio show, you really weren't doing.
Yeah, really wasn't doing. Media.
You really weren't.
You know who I miss? I miss Danger Boy.
Boy's working in St. Catharines at a station called 97.7 with another guy.
Yeah, would you say hello for me?
We will. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In fact, right. We'll send him you actually saying that.
All right. Mm-hmm. Good.
So, do you play a little golf once in a while?
I play still? A little golf. Yeah. I a little bit. I'm still in North Bay with my friends. Have a cottage there, and I play here at Magna mostly. And
nice.
I also have a Club Link membership too. And once in a while in Florida. So I love golf.
Do people remember? I wonder that you were actually a pretty decent player. Were you actually a club pro at one point?
I was. CPGA, but on the business side. I never made any money playing golf. I made money at golf, though, and running a course and equipment and all of those areas. I employed a couple of Class A pros that did a lot of teaching and whatnot.
Oftentimes, those CPGA guys, you know, they're good players, but they end up being businessmen more than they are.
And more and more, I think, owners of golf courses, whether it's private or public, are trying to look at a pro manager that can do more. So, given I wasn't a great player, I was an okay player.
What handicap is that?
That's
now?
The area. I'm 10 now.
Are you really?
Yeah, and I was about
that means he's
six at the time. You're six. Are you still six?
No. I'm a horrid. whore. I don't even play golf anymore.
Don't you?
I gave it up.
Yeah?
Can't
Why?
Can't afford to.
Why?
You can't afford to.
Because I have an ex-wife now, too.
Listen, I'm in good relationships with my ex-wife and my kids and my wife, Laura, and the kids. So life's pretty good to me. Good. I'm very fortunate.
So what do you do on a daily basis now? Obviously, you're a director. Is that how you would term it at Magna?
I am a director at Magna. I'm on several boards. Some I chair, some I'm as a director. So probably you would call me a corporate director for part of my life. I do a bit of consulting, kind of advisory stuff on mostly on dealing with government, but in Canada and the United States. And I'm at Castles Brock at the law firm. So I'm shilling for Castles Brock every day.
If you want to, if you have time, you want to be on the board of directors of HumbleAndFredRadio.com. We'll give you a card. Ask around.
But you're not an actual lawyer, are you?
No, I'm not a lawyer. So I'm on the business development side, on the advisory side, either advising clients of our law firm. I'm not a lobbyist, but we would advise them on who they might want to retain if they need a lobbyist. We advise them on dealing with government, federally, provincially, municipally, across the country. And so we have quite a team there at Castles Brock. And of course, we got great lawyers, too, but you need both, you know. Somebody's got to bring the business in the door, too.
Do you miss the being in the spotlight? Are there parts of having been premier that you miss? And there are, maybe we can talk about parts that weren't so pleasant.
Well, I miss is not the right word. I really enjoyed my time and probably feel good about it. We accomplished a lot, in my view, and we got things done from fixing government and fixing, you know, the economy, education, healthcare. I mean, we did a lot of things with restructuring of hospitals, the new curriculum, testing, bringing up the standards in education, whatnot. And I had some pushback along the way whenever you make changes, but I get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and I feel really good about my time in politics, and I feel good about the accomplishments. Was everything perfect? No. I mean, hindsight, there's lots of things you might do a little differently, but I'm quite happy to leave it behind, too. It was time for me to move on. I've made a number of changes, you know, in my life, from golf pro to running a ski hill. I was a teacher starting out, and then politics, and now I really enjoy the variety with different boards and different companies and different clients, and so I'm moving all the time.
And I maintain, I mean, when you look back at your legacy, the one thing that sticks out for me, listen, no matter what the government, no matter what the party, no matter what the era, there's peaks and valleys, there's victories and there's losses, but you did everything you said you were going to do. And I mean, you look at the current premier, and I mean, he struggles with the truth and honesty, but you really did that. And I mean, that's a pretty impressive legacy, because if you go back over so much of, you know, provincial Canadian politics as a whole, you told the truth. You got to feel good about that.
Yeah, I do. And you know what? The truth, some people don't like to hear the truth. I mean,
no.
we certainly didn't hear it in the last election with, you know, the current fiscal situation in Ontario or how to address it. And it's unfortunate. I do feel good about that. And you know what? What I've learned is the public you got to give them more credit than we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. There are some that will blindly vote one party or another. There are others who say, I'm not going to vote. But by and large, they're not stupid. You know, I think they knew in the last election that the finances weren't in good shape, that you couldn't, none of the parties were going to be able to live up to all the promises they made. And I think they were disappointed in that in the last election. And so we did tell it like it was. We said we're in, you know, in 95. Well, you campaigned with me in 95.
Oh, yes. It was right.
I campaigned with you. I campaigned against
me and everything.
We have to have time to tell the story of the night that you celebrated your election, because it's just, even now when I think about it, it's just bizarre that we were even part of it. But continue.
Well, it was, we were in tough, right? And we had this huge deficit. We had a jobs crisis. We had a deficit crisis. We had a spending problem. So the Common Sense Revolution was a plan to get us back on track. We had to cut back on the spending. Not easy, but we told people that, and they said, yeah, we get it, and they voted for it. And At the same time, and what's different, McGinty's trying to cut back now, and it actually for him, I guess it's quite an accomplishment to even talk about it. I don't think he'll be able to do it. I think it's unrealistic. But I'll tell you what else is missing. Our plan, the Consett Group, was a jobs plan, too. So we cut taxes. We said if we're cutting back in the public sector, we got to grow the private sector. So it was red tape. It was taxes. It was labor legislation. How do we encourage the private sector to pick up the slack? That's totally missing today in anything that I heard from the recent budget. But I get back to the people understood it. They knew, we were in deep. They took the tough medicine. They reelected us in 95 after we made those changes. And so I give them more credit than I think most politicians do.
I was going to say, speaking of politicians, back to, and we've had this discussion here on the show a few times about how some people are career politicians. They don't really have a lot of experience in the outside world, whether it's running a ski hill or teaching school or being a business person. And you came into politics. You know, you were a leader opposition, you became premier, and then you transitioned out of politics. So you, I think, had a bit of a, you had a life before and you have a life after. It reminds me of something I remember talking to Al Palladini about, the late Al, who was a member of the golf course I played at. And I remember just after he got elected, he said to me, you know, he'd been a pretty famous guy around Toronto. He said he could never have imagined the bullshit that he had to put up with.
Yeah.
Being in the public eye, and you can say that because it's the internet. And I remember him saying that to me one Sunday. I was having a coffee with him, and I said, "So, what do you think? How do you like it?" And he said, "You know what? I've been a famous person in this area all my life, but," he said, I just had no idea of the scrutiny that you're under. Do you think that turns a lot of people off?
I think it does, for sure. And some of the scrutiny is fair. Some of it's not fair. Somebody's personal life is not fair. And as you know, Al went through some of that. I went through a separation.
Al's son went through that.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's fair. I think examining the policies and motives behind the policies, if you want to talk about that. But I think it's over scrutiny. I mean, listen, I've been out of politics. I guess I've about 10 years now, and in fact it is just about 10 years, and I still see, Harris is getting paid this much at this job, or Harris, is doing this or doing that. What the heck has that got to do with a political writer talking about politics today? Mm-hmm. 10 years later, if you want to talk about my record, fine. I think that's fair game. So I think there is probably a little more, and I guess maybe it's they want to sell new newspapers, they want to sell advertising on the radio and on TV, and I suppose the public, there's some segment of the public are interested in that stuff, but I think it does discourage some people. The second thing that you touched on is I don't think politics should be a lifetime career. I think those experiences I had were valuable. I think they were helpful to me. I think there's you can overstay your welcome. In politics, I think it's good to get, we're parliamentary democracy. It's different than the U.S. In the U.S., you can have term limits that make sense. It's a little harder in parliamentary democracy, but I volunteered term limits. I ran. We did what we said we were going to do. I showed you could do that and do some tough things and still get reelected. Two terms was enough. Turn it over to somebody else.
How frustrating is that now? Because even in the last federal election, your name comes up in a negative way. Like, the provincial election, people want to keep bringing up the Harris years or mentioning your name like that's a bad thing. And again, even in the federal election, people accusing Stephen Harper of being like Mike Harris. Is that frustrating when you look back?
Well,
would you like to lash out at these people or stand up and defend yourself?
No, Harper got a majority. It didn't hurt him.
No, it didn't.
Listen.
That's precisely why I voted for him.
I think there is a segment of the population that believes in big government or socialism or the public service should be delivering all the services. I thought whoever can do it most efficiently and effectively should deliver them,
right?
So my philosophy doesn't jive with everybody. So those that bring it up negatively are reminding those people who like big government, who think government should own and do everything, and like that public sector monopoly. And people benefit from that. So it reminds them, but they never voted for me, and I don't think you need them to get elected either.
What about when it goes as far as like Walkerton? Like, obviously, you're exonerated in that situation. We know how that came down. But people actually try and hang death on you.
Well, yeah. I mean, Walkerton and Ipawash, those, I mean, it's silly when they bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the tragedy at Walkerton, I mean, everybody regrets these things happen. The tragedy at Walkerton was a tragedy for a lot of people, and I think we all regret it. The lesson of Walkerton, though, the left-leaning big union government advocates argue that it was because of you shouldn't privatize water services, and they use Walkerton as an example. Well, it's the exact opposite. Walkerton was government. It was government employees. It wasn't private. It was a couple of buffoons. I don't know whether I'll get sued for that or not.
No, I think.
I got pretty good stuff on the record to defend it. And a couple of buffoons weren't qualified, working for the municipal government, you know, who screwed up. If that had been a private sector company, they'd have never got away with that, you know. And even after all the things that happened, which were a tragedy, I think it still took them a couple of years to fire the guys. I mean, we should learn lessons from these tragic situations that happen. And it bothers me in that sense. I don't think that's fair, but you know, I guess politics is not fair always, and that's life.
As you were getting your coffee, Mike, we were talking about kind of our history with you and where it all began, and I guess it was Bob Reed that sort of got hip to the fact that we had this little show and that it might be good for you to come on in the early 90s to the Humble and Fred show at the Edge. Do you remember those first few times we sort of just goofed around with each other?
I absolutely do. I said, Bob, are you crazy? Listen, you know, the staid old conservative party, if you like, of Bill. I don't think Bill Davis would have come on your show. I love Bill. I think he was a great premier for his time. But there was a whole young people, there was a whole audience that you reached that weren't as engaged in politics as I think they ought to have been. And you guys gave me an opportunity to be able to talk to them. And whether they agreed with me or not, that was kind of fun, and I enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun.
Well, one of my favorite memories, because I was explaining to the guys in the office sort of how we knew you, and I remember the first few times it was just you and I think Bob and maybe a couple people at a time, and then when you were running for premier, all of a sudden, I remember we were in Brampton, and they said, oh, Mike's coming. And I looked out, and there were three buses filled with reporters and the Harris campaign, and you kind of did us a solid because you got us a lot of publicity at that point. It was very, very
but
well.
But you were running at that time.
Well, I was going to say, at some point, we need to rekindle the free French fry debate because that was our platform, Mike, and we really kind of thought once you were elected, you'd start to figure out a way to distribute the French fries to the people because that's what they want.
Yeah, well, there were the McDonald's and they thought you're going to compete unfairly with us. But that was a lot of fun. You had fun with it. I had fun with it. I think the levity, if you like, of some of that still helped to bring home that there's a serious election going on here, and where do you stand? And I remember very, very clearly. And by the way, Tony Clement was on my staff at that time too. I don't even remember Tony.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and
Brampton boy,
the Brampton boy, and we made a pledge. Right, you. I think it started with you guys on the radio saying Harris will never cut taxes. No politician ever cut taxes,
that's
right?
Well, we had you sign
the
Fred,
pledge.
Humble and Fred, Mike Harris Accord.
That's right. So we had this pledge, and if I got elected and I cut the taxes, you had to eat the accord, right?
Yes, that's right.
And if I didn't, I had to eat the accord,
right?
And which was a fair wager,
and
I remember what happened.
I came in with a cake, and the cake was resembled the.
I didn't come in with a cake. Danger Boy baked the, or his wife.
Elizabeth baked the cake.
She baked the cake, and the reason was you didn't want to eat the paper that was written on, and we did, and that, you know, that was good. I wanted to bring the accord today, but you guys ate it.
I was going to say, I can't speak for Fred. For me, the most surreal moment, one of the most surreal moments I've ever had as a broadcaster, was a couple nights after the election at the ROM. There's 2,000 Conservative Party people from all over Ontario, and Mike Harris is on stage, you know, getting all the accolades and all this. And at some point, somebody on your staff says, "Hey, Humble Fred, Mike wants you on stage." We're like, "What?" We first of all, we were just surprised to get invited to this thing. And at one point, you're speaking, you said something to the effect of, "The only guys that I ran against that had the whatever it is, the graciousness to come and congratulate me tonight, please welcome Humble and Fred." And then we're on stage, and Fred and I are looking at each other like, "What the hell's going on?"
Yeah.
And then you picked my hand up, and we're just like, "You're holding us up." And afterwards, these conservatives from like you know, outside of the GTA are like, "Who are you? who are you guys? Yeah. And why are you on stage with Mike?"
Yeah,
and they're like, "It's too hard to explain."
Well,
it really was a wild moment.
It was kind of fun, and I didn't think the mainstream media were going to invite you, so I figured I better invite you.
it was truly a weird moment.
But aside from, you know, you did something in that election when you started talking about me and politicians, and you were going to run, and you did something to help bring the election to your listeners that it was on. You did it in a fun way, but you did it. Mm. And I think you did a good thing in that. I'm not saying everything you did was good.
No. Well, obviously not, because we're broadcasting around Fred's old dining room table now.
No, it's interesting you say that, because we had just come through the Ray years, and let's be honest, the NDP appealed to that 18, 24, 18, 30-year-old listener, and that was such a disaster. It just lined up nicely, and then we sort of jumped on your wagon, and you know, most of our listeners bought into it for those reasons, because I think we were somewhat rational through it while having fun that, hey, the province needs to change, and this is the guy to do it.
Well, I also think it did you a service in terms of humanizing somebody that, you know, maybe they weren't as familiar with because of their political leanings. And then what I said too, it was always, whenever we'd ask you, whether it was the Accord or a couple days after the election or during the next election, you always seemed to find time for us, which we were very flattered by, because we figured once you were elected, like, you're going to be the premier, and we would go back to being who we were, which was some funny little disc jockeys. But you were always ready for a phone call and always happy to oblige. And again, even today, we know you don't do a lot of press. The fact that you came in was
a big I found a place.
Yeah.
And got a place to park.
Oh, well, I'm very impressed, because not only did you not mix up 30th with 13th Street, which everybody does, but I mean, all the stuff that you've got a better memory than we do as far as Danger Boy and the Accord and everything. I really feel inadequate right now.
Well, you know what? I don't want to comment on that, because I always got to tell the truth. I don't want to agree with that. God.
Yeah. But it's true.
No. But listen, I've always liked the approach you had to your listeners, whether you're streaming them or whether you're on radio or wherever it is, and I think you've always been straight up, had fun doing it, and I enjoyed it. Sometimes when I had to go on some shows, you're a little more cautious. Maybe I never worried that you were. I mean, you asked me some bizarre things. But I never worried. You know, the goal wasn't how do we blindside people. It was how do we, and if there were sometimes tough questions, that's fair. If there's a tough issue, so I always enjoyed the time a little more with you guys.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians, do your part, and get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine, paid for by the Government of Ontario. Come on, people. Let's do it. Let's get her done.
You know, yesterday I got a chance to play golf with our friend Tim Niblett. He's a retirement Sherpa. We'll tell you about him later. But he's one of a bunch of people that I know, myself and the Fred Man included, that are wearing the stylish and super functional Health Gauge Phoenix, healthgauge.com.
The revolution is here. People have been wearing sort of data watches for a while, the Fitbits. This is something else. This is a new generation. Blood pressure, oxygen, activity levels, calories burned, and so much more. You've heard Freddie and I talk about it. You know, yesterday I played golf, but it was too hot to walk, but I still saw. It's funny, even riding the cart, you know, I'm doing 5,000 and 6,000 steps because, you know, just in the general course of play. Mm-hmm. Keep track of your health in a way that's never been available before. Share the information. Go to the app. Set your parameters and make sure that you are being as optimally healthy as possible. HealthGage.com promo code is HumbleFredHG. 15 points off this watch, which is a nice saving. These aren't, they're not cheap, but they're inexpensive. Let me put it that way. HealthGage.com. HumbleFredHG is the promo code.
The retirement Sherpa, Tim Niblett, is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim, you know, if you're in the mindset of building wealth right from scratch, or whether you want to enhance what you have or have somebody have a second look at it, Tim is the guy. Available whenever you need him. Just go to retirementsherpa.ca. Again, if you have an existing plan, he'll have a look, give his assessment, no strings attached. He'll tell you whether he feels you're on the right course or not. Or again, if you're starting up, you know, he's the... Listen, it's his demeanor, you know, very calm, very cool, very collected, very knowledgeable. You feel like you're in good hands with this man, and that's very important when your future is on the line. Figure it out. He's the retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca.
Figure it out, buddy.
This is Humble and Fred.
Let's talk about the time you were the premier of the province and the day-to-day life you had. Not that you're not busy now, but you had a lot of responsibility and it's a lot of pressure day-to-day. Do you look back on those times and think, you know, I had some fun, aside from being, you know, somewhat criticized. Were there moments you were like, you get up and you go, hey, I'm in charge of this whole thing. This is pretty cool.
I'm not sure it was quite that way, but I mean, I took the job seriously. I understood the responsibility. I understood, you know, 12 or 13 million Ontarians were counting on me to do the best I could and the right thing and find the right balance and all the employees and whatnot. So I was conscious of that, and that weighs on you, that side of it. But I met so many terrific people, both in the caucus and some in the opposition, not a lot, but some, the public. I got to travel all over the province. I got to represent the province all over the world. So I'm still touching wood. I was a pretty lucky guy that the people gave me that opportunity. And so I'm always appreciative of it and always respected that. I had a lot of fun on some days and very serious times, tough sleeping some nights when you're saying, can we really do some of these things?
What do you refer to as now? What is the proper title? Like, you know, they always talk to, you know, ex-presidents are still Mr. President. Are you still...
Hey, you.
Hey, Mikey.
Mr. President.
Yeah. Hey, Mikey, what's up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know what?
Official title?
My official title is just Mike Harris. I got an honorary doctorate. I guess you could officially call me doctor if you
Ed
want.
Nipissing?
Nipissing.
Did that
University.
Come through? Because the teachers were in a big snit over that or something. That was so childish.
Again, you know, it was kind of the noisy 1%.
Right.
that were there. Oh, no, it was a wonderful time, and I got a very warm welcome from the faculty and the students, and was there 1% disagreed? Sure. But, no, Mike Harris. So some still call me premier, some use the title honorable because you know that's the title when you're when you're premier. There actually is an honorary title if you're a member of the Privy Council, which is you're appointed by the Prime Minister of the Privy Council. So all federal cabinet ministers and some premiers were appointed to the Privy Council. In fact, the Premier of Ontario always was appointed, and that officially, you keep that title forever then. Once you're appointed, you're there. And I was never appointed. I think Chrétien and I had a few tiffs, and he never actually appointed me to the Privy Council. So there is no title goes with it, and I'm quite happy with that, and I'm happy to be Mike Harris or Hey You or whatever.
Another part of your legacy, and we still hear about it, amalgamation and the downloading that took place. But again, from a rational standpoint, you had to deal with the change in transfer payments from the Chrétien government. And so many people wanted to ignore that, but that changed the whole dynamic for running this province,
yeah,
did
they,
it not?
They made the biggest cuts to health care and education and transfer payments that were ever made. But you know what? I they had a problem. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one other way that I think I was very different. When Chrétien and Martin were slashing these transfers, I didn't criticize them for it. I said, you know what? There's no point having a booming Ontario and a bankrupt Canada. I said, I get it. We'll do the best we can with it. You know, get us into surplus federally. We'll do what we can to get us into surplus provincially and stop, you know, mounting this debt onto our kids and our grandkids. Whereas today, everybody screams. And yeah, I mean, I think Harper just, when they announced 6% more for health care for the next 3 or 4 years and then inflation or something, everybody's screaming and yelling for more money all the time. The feds have to balance their books, too. We're in the country of Canada, first and foremost. Then we're in the province of Ontario. And then I said to the cities, and I tell you, people forget, I right after I was elected, I went to the conference, the municipal conference of the Ontario Municipal Association. It was in the summer. And I told them that we had to, I think I asked them for a 3% reduction in the transfers that we gave municipality in total. And I got a standing ovation. I said, you know what, you do that, we'll fix our problems. And they understood. There was no point having a booming Toronto or a booming London in a bankrupt province. I mean, mm-hmm. the same thing applied there. So we did work together. Now, we did make some, we downloaded some things, we uploaded some things. When we made those changes, we put the city of Toronto together, as you know, because we thought Toronto's a great city. If you want to be a world-class city, you got to all start paying your fair share everywhere, and not everybody was doing that, whether it was policing or whatever it was in some of where we did the amalgamation. We tried to keep some local autonomy. Was it perfect? No. Is city council in Toronto too big? You bet it is. You know, that was sort of a sop we gave. They all wanted to hang on to more seats. It was a mistake doing that. But here's when they talk about the download. You know, we took education off the property tax. That mm-hmm. was the, you know, that was a $2 or $3 billion nut that we uploaded to ourselves. But after we made those changes, and the amalgamation, and the biggest one was Toronto, Mel Lastman became the first mayor of the enlarged city, and he had a zero tax increase 3 years in a row. So we couldn't have downloaded too much.
I just want to say something about that. You know, a lot of people at the time of the transfer payments being cut, and I remember that this particular issue, I remember it distinctly. Part of the problem, and I think, and we've also talked about this, the average person doesn't really either understand issues or, I think, more importantly, doesn't really pay attention to them. So all they hear is Mike Harris's mm-hmm. health care has gotten worse and less money for this. But they don't really understand the layering of it. And I think you were sort of the victim of a lot of that, of people not really paying attention or understanding the issues the way, you know, well, Fred does or you do. Yeah,
well, Stephen Harper's the same way. Yeah. There's so many people that hate Stephen Harper. You ask them why, and they can't really tell you why.
Right.
No.
Uh-huh.
But there is, as I said, there is an element in Canada of very left-leaning, socialistic type folks and politicians and media. They're not everybody, but I believe the majority of Canadians and the majority of Ontarians and at heart, are small C conservative. And if you can reach mm-hmm. them with a small C conservative, that means you pay your own way. You know, you don't run up deficits. The same, for some reason or other, these lefties think, you know I got to pay my mortgage. I know I can't spend more than I take in my own private life. But it's okay if government does that. What the heck?
No, I know.
I don't understand that. I really don't. And I think it is very selfish and self-serving to think I'm entitled to this, or I in the public sector entitled to this. Well, and I'm entitled to still with my indexed, you know, full pension and everything else. Where in the private sector, that's not the case. And I think that's selfish. I think it's wrong. And you know, I took those messages to the people, and we got two majority governments. You know, so I think small C conservatives can get elected if they take a small C conservative message to the mm-hmm. people. And sure, we're compassionate, and sure, we care about the environment, we care about the most vulnerable, we care about all those things. But you don't help them by making them more dependent. You help them by giving them an opportunity to become independent. And that's probably the defining moment for me when I define my philosophy, or what do I believe in, is paying somebody to stay home and do nothing, and paying them more and more to stay home and do nothing. Is that really helping their self-esteem, their kids, their family? Or is giving them an education, giving them a work experience, giving them an opportunity to contribute? I believe, is what we should always be trying to do. And that's what we try to do with workfare, with all of our policies.
Workfare, I remember that. I mean, again, you get back to what's rational. That made so much sense. Again, for people's personal integrity, rather than just, you know, the handout, here's a hand up. And it just all makes so much sense. And then you get the detractors who get like vicious and go at you for those ideas that really at the end of the day made a lot of sense.
Well, I believe it does. And you know, when if somebody's not capable of working or not capable of that, we're going to be more generous. And mm-hmm. we were. Mm-hmm. But, you know, workfare applied to those who were capable, were able, you know, able of learning, able to that. And we called it, you know, workfare, education fair, training fair, get off your tough and do something fair. I mean,
man, what's wrong with that?
I think it struck a chord with people.
But the word that you hear, and it's true, about there's a certain viciousness from the left against conservatives on the right. And again, you say small C conservative. I mean, I would self-describe that way. And I always say that I'm a conservative when it comes to money. But I'm a humanist when it comes to human beings. I want people to be well and do well, and whatever they want to do is fine with me. But let's just not spend more than we have. There is a certain viciousness in the way you were attacked, and the way that, and it's funny, those people who would be, you know, would say of themselves they're compassionate and they care about others, but they don't care about the way they go after someone like you, or they go after anything that's a little bit right of the way they, of their philosophy. As Fred said, you ask somebody why you don't like Stephen Harper, oh, I think his eyes are too close together. It's like, really? You can't articulate anything beyond I don't like the way he looks?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I suppose maybe we label the loony left sometimes too,
but not with the same viciousness.
But I don't think with the same viciousness.
You don't have time.
It's a philosophy that we should be debating and talking about. And I don't know how anybody can argue against paying your own way.
No, I know.
And not burdening, you know, your kids and your personal life, and not burdening future generations. In fact, you know, I think in your personal life, I think you kind of hope that your kids can have it easier than you did, and
sure,
maybe have a better start, and maybe, you know, particularly some that didn't have that good a start in life but worked hard and got ahead. So why wouldn't you want to do that in public life too? Why wouldn't you want to leave them with a little bit of a surplus, not a deficit?
Sure.
And
stop making sense, Mike. No one's listening. Yeah.
Would it be fair to ask you what you think of Dalton McGuinty as a person? Because I think there's a real correlation here that, you know, good people basically, well, no, I'm contradicting myself, often good people don't make good politicians, but it's just amazed me how he's been reelected with so many, and I'm going to say it, blatant lies. Not telling the truth or campaigning on something and then totally turning face when he's elected. What do you think of that? Because you didn't do that.
Well, I think it's wrong. I think he's got elected because over the last number, I mean, if you go back, there hasn't been a steady small C conservative message that was able to get out and get believed. And by the way, I mean, they spend millions and millions of dollars, the left now, through working families, and it's actually should be illegal.
That working that, families
that
is brutal.
Third party space. Yeah. That's all mm-hmm. union money trying to hang on to their monopoly. That's wrong. But I guess people have short memories. I mean, Dalton said, you know, I won't increase taxes. First thing he did was hike them massively. And that hurts the private sector mm-hmm. job creators. When you look at unemployment levels, there hasn't been a problem with public sector hiring. He's obviously put too much money into the public sector, and he's hurting the private sector. I mean, electricity policies, he's tilting at windmills with the starting and stopping two gas plants that you desperately need if you're going to have wind and solar mm-hmm. for when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. These kinds of policies. I think Dalton, those were the campaign team, I suppose. He'll argue that. I think he's a nice enough guy. I think he's a good family man. I think he's clearly got one flaw. He'll say and do whatever it takes to get elected, and whether he thinks he can do it after or not.
I think mm-hmm. you answered it partly in the beginning of that response by saying people have short memories. It goes to what I think I said, and it's very true. People really don't either remember, care, understand. I'll give you an example. One of the things that Dalton ran on was, again, you know, I'm not going to raise taxes, I'm going to cut it. And then just, I don't know if you guys, well, you would remember, Mike, but just after he got elected, there was some story that he said, oh, we had no idea what the finances mm-hmm. were. And I remember saying to somebody, are you shitting me? You don't think he knew exactly what was in the budget and somebody on his team understood those things? But he actually told people publicly, oh, we had no idea of the state the promise was in. Really? You didn't?
Or taxes became levies.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
fees.
But you know what I'm saying, Mike? And again, I mean, call them what you will, that started immediately.
Yeah.
That sort of bait and switch of the Liberal government started right away.
Yeah. Listen, I hear you. It's unfortunate because over the last 8 years, this mess we're in, he got us into this mess. Did he inherit a small deficit? Yeah. Was it there when I left office? No. But there was a small deficit when he took over. But he's exacerbated it mm-hmm. tremendously. He's hiked taxes. He's built up the bureaucracy. He's massively overspent. And now he's saying to everybody, you got to help me fix it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You got us into this mess, pal. It wasn't sustainable. You should have known that. And they've got a real problem in their hands. And we're going to find out whether they actually have the wherewithal or the kahunas to rein it back in. They just brought in a budget. They say they're going to try and do it. I don't think they're capable of it, to be honest with you. And as I said, the second thing that's missing is where's the help for the private sector? You know, you're saying you're going to squeeze the public sector,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, that means what, fewer public sector jobs? We got a jobs problem in this province too.
We got a jobs problem in this room, exactly. For God's sake.
There are too
Mike,
many people
I say to
unemployed,
you as a former premier, yeah. Where's the podcast money? Where's that money? Mike, before Fred asks you this,
well, he's giving money to just about everybody else. So why not?
We should call him. Why not us, Dalton? What are your? I know you have to catch a Porter flight.
I'm going to catch a Porter flight, and I'm going to go over and watch this budget in Ottawa.
So, what are your time? Is there anyone here with Mike? Is Mike on his own?
Are you on your own?
All on my own.
It's 11:30.
Cool.
I know you got to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He hired as an assistant. Nope.
What time do you have to be out of here?
I know it was.
Yeah, I got to be out of here. No, I got about 5 minutes.
What we want to do is we're going to play. We don't play any more music, but we're going to play a song because we'd love to get a picture with you. And if you wouldn't mind doing our little promo on our site today, so we can say, "Hey, I'm Mike Harris, hanging out with Humble and Fred." It's very simple. We would be honored if you do that for us.
Do you have it on a teleprompter? So I.
It's all right. We can coach you.
We call it the Howard prompter because I just tell you what to say.
Okay. And there's a whole whack more we wanted to talk about, so maybe you can come back again.
Here you go.
Yeah, we'd love that.
Well, that's it. Do you want to ask one last question?
Yeah.
We've got a couple minutes, and then we'll go.
How close did you come to running for the leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada? Because I was hoping you would.
Well, I thought about it because I was asked to by a whole whack of supporters who were thought I should consider it, and they knew I wouldn't consider it unless, you know, unless they came to me and said this is a very real option. So they did talk to people across the country. I admit that, and I think there was a real shot. But at the end of the day, you know, I made a decision. I actually was in politics longer than I might have been because we had that period in opposition. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd started out in 81, so I was really 21 years in political life, 10 years in opposition. And I'd had my two terms as premier, and I legitimately felt, you know, it was time to move on. Federally would have been another challenge, but at the end of the day, I think I made the right decision. I didn't intend to run federally. They asked me to. Who's they? Well, there was a campaign.
Those
team.
Are the same people.
The they guys.
Those are the same people not asking us to do anything.
Right.
I just have one. If you can,
there were a whole bunch of theys out there. You didn't want me to run for anything. So was the right decision for me.
Did you? It's not fair to ask this. It's a longer question, but I'll say very simply. Like I always got the impression from you because I'd seen you outside of the political arena, either at a golf course or hanging out.
You saw me hitting it out of bounds.
I saw you hitting it a little bit squirrely. I was like, don't tell anyone you were CPD.
Yeah, exactly.
But you didn't seem to me the type of politician that did it because of the sort of allure of power. So much as I'm sure that was an interesting part of it, but to me it seemed like you sort of thought, hey, I'll go into this. As another, you know, I'm happy to serve the public, and then maybe I'll move on, because it wasn't always about the power for you. There was a public service component for you, I think.
Yeah, I think I honestly believe that the public service component. Do people like power? I guess that you probably you do. I mean, what the heck? Everybody wants to be the boss. So
yeah, sure.
Probably,
we wouldn't know.
You wouldn't turn it down, right? I mean, clearly you're the boss of this outfit. And
yes, we are.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right.
You see the look in his face. This outfit.
We got about hey Mike. We got about $1,500 invested here, buddy.
All right. Well, let me know when you start paying dividends. You're right, and there is a lot of reward in public service, and I want to say something. There is a lot of reward in being a public servant. I you know, some people said, you know, you're always picking fights with public servants. No, maybe with their unions. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of very loyal and dedicated teachers, nurses, public servants, and whatnot, and there is reward in that, and the same at the political level. And by the way, the finances of politics are not quite the same as if you work hard as they are in the private sector either. But I didn't go into it for power. I went into it to make a change. I went into it to fix some things that I thought were wrong. And I went into it with a philosophy that I thought would be important to turn the province around. And I did my best at that. And now I moved on.
Well, I'll tell you, and I'm not afraid to say it, you're my benchmark politician. You just are. And I'll always say that.
I've got your rookie card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even kidding.
Because, again, how we started, it all comes back to truth. I mean, what more can you ask from a politician? I am going to do this, and he does it. That's all anybody really wants.
And the same thing that you said you'd come and see us today, you actually showed up. We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Mike Harris, everybody. Come
okay.
on.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Not even kidding around. So, you podcast fans. We're going to do the thing where we play a little bit of a song. We're going to go away and take some pictures. We'll be back, and Kelly will do the news, and we'll tell you about all the nice people that support us here at HumbleAndFredRadio.com.
Thanks, Mike. Surprised
that Miguel blinded me with something.
This is Humble and Fred.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, what? What is this motion?
Every day. More and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine, paid for by the Government of Ontario. Well, you know, where we're at, we're getting closer and closer to having the ability to travel pretty much where we want. And if you plan on that long-awaited trip, you'll need a mobile data provider to keep you connected while you're there. We encourage you, download the GigSky app for Android or iOS and get affordable data coverage in over 190 countries using your phone's eSIM. It's the easiest, most affordable, and convenient way to stay connected internationally, whether you're pulling up directions, you know, looking for a great restaurant, all that stuff. When you're traveling, you know, you want the info. Well, GigSky is all you need. Plans are prepaid. No contracts or recurring fees. You get what you pay for. Your service never throttled. Download the GigSky app today. Enter code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan or visit GigSky.com for more information. Let me tell you.
Yeah, baby.
Let me tell you about the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Really, it's the perfect plan for small business. You can have coverage for your small business. It is doable. Go to chamberplan.ca. Get a free quote today. It doesn't matter what size your business is. It doesn't matter exact. Well, it really doesn't matter what you can afford because something can be designed for what you can handle, okay? So just don't write it off as something you can't do. At the very least, investigate. Wouldn't it be great to give your small company, you know, prescription coverage or dental coverage or some kinds of therapies, which a lot of workers often need. All those things that make life a little bit easier for a small business, the employees of a small business. A benefits package that works for small business. They've been around for 40 years, so it works like a charm. 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. Again, do yourself a favor today. Go to chamberplan.ca. Get a free quote. The badge is right there. Look into it. A lot of Humble and Fred listeners have done it, and their small companies now part of the Chamber Plan.
This is Humble and Fred.
It is very loud.
Okay, sorry. No.
Yeah.
It's Humble and Fred Radio.
That's perfect.
.com. I wonder if I still remember how to backsell a song. Let me try. Don't want to
do it.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to. You know what? Hey, everybody, there's Thomas Dolby. Thomas Dolby, Humble and Fred Radio. .com.
You should say it with a smile. Hark, if you just like the song we played.
Yeah.
I was gonna say
Humble and Fred Radio. .com. Fred, have you got something coming up in sports?
Yes.
Yes. Honk if you like sports.
Fred, what the fuck is that all about?
Honk if you like bullshit.
Yeah, we should. Next time we put up a billboard, that's what it should say. Yeah. Honk if you like bullshit.
Look at everyone's all excited about. Wow. Hey, J Mac, could you come over to meet the premier?
J Mac.
That's cool, eh?
Go by.
That's our buddy from across the street, J Mac Auto. J Mac Auto, for all your auto needs, call J Mac.
They do it all. They've done it all for me.
I saw that you brought your paper in with your Mike Harris homework. I was very impressed. Did you get everything answered? Were there some things that you didn't get to?
Well, the only thing I would have got to, because, you know, and seriously, he had to leave. I was going to get to. I was going to say, of all the things he did, I mean, again, I was a big supporter, and I think you were for the most part. The one thing I didn't understand really was the 407 thing, but I didn't want to ask it at the end because I'm sure it would have taken a lot of explaining. You know, the way they sold that off and
to the Spanish.
In retrospect, you know, I still don't really see the benefits of that, but that would be the only thing.
You know, but that thing you brought up about the liberals cutting transfer payments.
Oh, yeah.
That used to drive me nuts.
Same here.
Because you know, maybe I'm not as politically passionate as you, but I was certainly aware of that issue. And it used to drive me nuts when I'd say to people, don't you understand that they gave us less money? In fact, historically, the lowest amount we'd ever gotten, of course there's going to be longer wait times at hospitals. There's going to be pain to go along with this. Mm-hmm. But to his credit, he never, as he said, he never, you know, gave them any shit and, you know, people just have to suck it up.
Suck it up,
and
people.
The thing is, we had just come off an NDP government, which was disastrous. I mean, it was...
Yes.
It was pathetic.
Yes.
Was that the Bob Rae government?
Bob Rae.
Almost immediately, all the economic indicators in Ontario
took off and shot up under his leadership. And again, there's no perfect government, and there's always, as I said before, there's hills and valleys.
Hills and valleys.
Seriously, and victories and defeats.
Victories and defeats.
But generally, all you want out of government is the truth and be rational. And they delivered that. I've said my piece.
Well said. Well said, sir. Well said.
I'm not sure where Kelly's going to get to with the news. Pete, has your stomach settled down?
Perfectly settled down now.
So
I'm
let me
producing
ask you a question.
Normal bowel movements.
When you had your first solid shit.
Yes.
Oh, yes. When you had your first.
Did you cry?
When you first looked down and saw a fully formed poo, did you say to yourself, it's good to be home?
It's good to be back. Yes, I definitely did. And the choirs sang and the odor was back too. The proper odor.
Okay.
I'm not
did
saying
it
my
sink
shit.
Or swim.
It. I have a nice floaty.
Yeah, it should float. Yeah.
They're supposed
float.
To. Aren't
yeah,
they? They're
float.
Isn't that
health
when they
float?
It's
a healthy float.
Yes,
oh,
indeed.
It's supposed
Fuck.
To be toothpaste consistency, and it should float.
What?
And I can brush my. Let me just say, I can brush my tooth. It's my shit. In fact, I did.
I've seen that online.
Yeah. Oh no!
It's two girls and a toothbrush. I believe is what he's talking about. It's funny that you ever had a.
Oh, too bad Mr. Harris is gone.
Oh no! I know.
Quality.
Love this.
Quality stuff.
Was he on the mic close enough? Because he was a little bit farther away.
He was off the mic, but with my technical skills, I was able
it.
To boost
yeah,
it and keep it. Yeah.
It's funny that thing about the movement. You ever had like one where it just smells, and it's not that it smells bad, but it just smells like something not of this earth.
Oh,
and you're
yes.
thinking, what's going on inside the factory here that it came out with that? For instance, yesterday at the end of our work day, I was about to leave, and he and I were walking out together.
Who's
for
he?
You.
Yeah, you be in this.
He comes out. He comes out with me in the doorway there, and he lifts his one cheek.
Come
and wait a second. He does the kung fu one too. He kind of goes like this.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Kung fu. He brings his foot up, and then he kung fu farts, and then I just sort of look at him. He looks at me like a dog that's done something weird.
No.
And then I have to walk through it.
Oh,
and I was like, it's all over me now.
Well, you didn't have to cut your nose hairs after that.
I wanted to cut my head off after that. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was an odor. It was a weird.
Yeah, it's almost like a sickness. I actually had that the other day. I'm not going to lie.
What?
And I was in a Winners, and I couldn't control it. And I was like, I have to find a bathroom really quickly. But the whole way, there was escapage. And I'm thinking, please don't anybody walk behind
escapage.
Me.
Escapage.
She was farting as she was walking.
No. Escapage, she called it.
Not audible escapage, which is worse, right?
Oh, then breezers
you're just thinking,
are worse.
Oh, my
silent
God.
But deadly.
Oh. And I found the loo and...
No, let's call Mr.
Happened,
Harris
right?
back.
Because it was all
get his,
he's missing
get his
good stuff.
Mike, what do you think about when you have a nice shit in? Yes. Do you ever do that? Do you ever have a nice poo? What do you think Galton McGinty's poo smells like? Yeah, that I was sad about Al Palladini. He passed away.
And Palladini's a pal of mine.
But Al...
Wasn't it reaching into the cup for a golf ball?
He literally died on...
Really?
Finished his round.
Yeah. Oh, he finished the round.
I think they finished their round. They were shaking hands and he fell over dead.
Really?
50,
that's
I think.
Horrible.
He was young.
No, he was older than 50.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
my mistake. I thought he was of a young...
How dare you?
I've died.
How dare I get the age wrong?
Why don't we just Google it and
really
see how old Al Palladini was when he stopped being a pal of mine.
Sorry, let's all talk at the same time.
Talking.
Are we all ready to talk at the same time? What were you going to say, Kelly? Because you
I
don't
said,
seem to
I
care
die on the golf course all the time.
Yeah. You you died the other day at Winder. At Winder.
I did.
Something.
No, the person that walked behind me did.
Al was one of those people that had, really didn't need all the crap that went with being a politician. He was plenty wealthy and he had a whole life of service. He's the most beloved person in his area in Woodbridge Vaughan. Now, Al Palladini was a beloved figure, a charitable guy, and all of a sudden, 6 months into politics, he's being slammed every day in the Star and his son and all this stuff. It was just awful, to tell you the truth. He didn't need it.
He was only 58.
57, 58, yeah. 58.
Like that. Well, that's not 50. Well,
in his 50s.
No, but,
he was in his 50s.
Like, near my age. Jesus, I ain't golfing anymore.
Well, beware the charity golf tournament.
You probably shouldn't. It's better left alone.
Yeah.
The stress that you...
But imagine the press that you'd get after that.
Me?
Yeah, exactly.
No. You know, that might be something for 2013. Somebody on the show needs to die.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Petey. Man.
Where are we at, buddy?
Oh, we're here.
Okay.
We're all right. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Right on.
You want to get into what Kelly's got? What do you got coming up in the news? Because there's a couple things that Freddie and I wanted to get to.
I've got some stuff on Alicia Silverstone and a Brinks truck.
Okay, well...
not related.
Before we get to that, I want to point out that... Freddie says to me earlier before the show starts, he goes, oh, you know, because we're talking about what kind of song could we play. He goes, hey, it's Terry Jack's 66th birthday.
Oh, my God. I have to leave. Terry Jack's is...
Oh, she
like,
cries.
No. Really? Honestly, I have to go.
Why?
Terry Jack's, people just have to go, bum, bum, bum. It is...
This is the most depressed...
I want to kill myself. I gotta leave.
Seriously. Well, this whole song's about a dead girlfriend.
I know. Goodbye, Michelle.
Yeah. So I said to Fred, I said, oh, yeah, that's Seasons in the Sun. I used to play it. It was like... One of the most depressing songs ever. So listen for a second.
We've known each other since we were 9 or 10. Together we've climbed hills and trees.
Just so you know, Kelly has left the studio desk and is now in the corner of the room with her fingers in her ears.
What's the deal?
I have no idea.
Makes her cry.
Makes her cry. It's hard to die. Your point was, well, at least he says we had joy, we had fun, but past tense.
I think Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again Naturally is more depressing than this.
Really?
Oh, okay, that's just about, like, that's, there's no hope for that guy in that song.
Here we go. We'll get to that in a second.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, but the hills that we climb were just seasons out of time.
This is the part that, bum, 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 bum. Okay, so Freddie says,
Goodbye, Papa.
Full Papa.
Come on, John Foy.
How does he have time to write a song and record it if he's dying?
Hey, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That thing sticks in my head. Oh, that's better.
Oh, yeah.
Then he gets into it. I remember I cried when my father died. Even the way he's singing, it's like, eh.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
Here we go.
Okay. No point in us remaining. We may as well go home.
May as well go home.
As I did on my own, alone again, naturally.
Yeah. Little pick me up at parties.
Yeah. But I will say this. Back then, you could write a song and it would be a huge hit and didn't matter how ugly you were.
True.
Like, if you ever watch those old 1970s Time Life magazines, do you ever see some of the video footage of these people? They were freakishly ugly.
What about Todd Rundgren?
Well, not only that. I looked at some video the other day of the Five Man Electrical Band. And it's funny, you forget how many hits they had.
Yep.
But they were just heinous. Sure. Teeth were all fucked up and their hair was weird.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bastards.
Video killed the radio.
Now let's get back to this one.
In my hour of need.
In my hour of need.
Like, you can't just say alone again. He's got to say naturally.
Yeah, because that's the way it is.
Nobody likes me.
Yeah, like,
it's
of course.
Oh, did we miss the part where his father died? Holy shit.
And the verses were so long, and then the chorus is like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Can't do that. Oh, come on.
All right, Kelly doesn't want to hear that.
What's the deal, Kelly?
The news intro from now on.
Yeah. What is the deal?
No, okay, first of all, that song and Wildfire, horrible songs that stuck in my head when I was a kid, and I can't get them out, and it's like that South Park where somebody sings Sticks, Come Sail Away, and it just goes through the kid's head, and you have to get to the end of this. That's what that song does to me, and it's very depressing, and I hate it.
Wildfire's a great song.
Yeah, wow.
Michael Martin Murphy.
It's about her horse that dies in Killer Frost. She dies too.
Fire. What about Horse with No Name?
Love that song.
So do I.
America.
Yeah. Why didn't they just name
it
that?
Like, I was going to say. Here's the thing. It's funny. You
had a lot of time on your
hands. I was saying that to the kids once. I go, they've been through the desert. You're in the desert.
It's a long time.
You have a long time.
Take one second and give the fucker a name.
Even the horse is like, we've been to the desert now. Yeah. I want a fucking Blackie.
Yeah.
Blackie's good.
Horsey horse.
Whiska.
It's easier to give it a name than try to refer to it without a name.
Yeah, true. Exactly.
It's How long does that take?
Which one is yours? That's the horse with no name.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, not me. I'm riding Wildfire.
Yeah. Good
Jesus. I'm riding wildfire. Well, listen, we got a couple more minutes before we get to...
terrible.
Actually, why don't we do this now? Do you want to talk about the pilot that went berserk?
Yeah.
Is that in your... Are you aware of that? Yeah, I saw it.
Your zeitgeist?
Oh, were you asking her if she's aware of that?
I think most people know by now that the JetBlue pilot freaked out, right?
Mm-hmm. But he was charged now.
Yeah, he might get up to 20 years.
Surprised me. That surprised me.
What a dipshit. Well, how did the flight attendant get off? You remember a few weeks before. And that, although that one was on the tarmac, that is all right. But when it's up in the air and this guy freaks out, holy shit.
But I don't know if he's a dipshit or he's just something went wrong. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's got some mental issues because... But the guy that's really the hero, there's a few passengers that try to subdue him, but it's the co-pilot. Because I guess there was some kind of thing going on in the cockpit, and he could see that the captain was starting to freak. Mm-hmm. And when the captain left the cockpit, he locked him out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He didn't want him back in there.
He's like...
You think about it, you know, that's the last guy you want in there.
Yeah.
Is like, you know... in the control.
As a passenger, that's so unnerving, though, to think that could be going on, and you have no idea, right?
No, exactly.
And also, you know, if the circumstance is a bit different, maybe he strikes out and hits the other guy, and the plane goes down, or...
takes it off autopilot, it's all over.
Jesus.
But you know what the clue was, Pete? It's strange, because the co-pilot was asked after, how did you know that there was going to be a problem? He said, well, the captain, while we were getting the plane ready, was singing this. He was like, we're going down. He's like, got a plane check, flaps up. We had joy, we had fun, we had Jesus.
But the plane.
That would be, as the guy's next to you is humming Alone Again Naturally.
Exactly.
Shit your pants.
I'm going down. But I meant to ask you this, Howard.
Shit your pants.
May I ask a technical question, Howard? Being the resident pilot expert.
I've flown many big planes.
Well, no, but the co-pilot locked him out. But then ultimately, wasn't it an off-duty pilot who landed the plane? They said there was an off-duty pilot who went in to the cockpit.
Oh, that's right. There was a guy. Yeah.
I think he went into the cockpit to help him.
Okay, so he helped. Because my question was, if he hadn't been there, couldn't the co-pilot?
You know, it's very similar to a story a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's every general aviation pilot's dream to have this happen. The captain had a heart attack and died.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And so the co-pilot literally said over the loudspeaker system,
goodbye, my friend.
He said, goodbye to you, my trusted friends. He said, we're all going to die in a horrible fiery hole. No, he actually said, is there anyone on the plane that has a pilot's license? And there was this guy, and I read this in a...
What are the chances?
So this guy puts up his hand. He's a similar license to, you know, what I have. And he basically let the guy come up to the front of the plane. He took the captain's seat, which is the left seat. Right. And he had this guy just be there to sort of help with the radios and make sure a few of the controls. And so to the... I read the story from the GA pilot's point of view. He just had a fucking boner the entire time. He's like,
oh, yeah, I love it. Oh.
He's like, all the passengers are horrified, but the GA guy's like, this is my dream. This is the best thing that's ever happened.
It would be.
It would.
Especially if you had the confidence you can do it. Yeah. Like, holy shit, I never thought I'd get this chance.
Exactly, but you wouldn't need that guy. It's always good to have, even when we're flying, when I'm up with somebody, I'll say, listen, would you mind doing this? Or I want you to make sure this is on. And why not? But that, you know, he didn't need somebody else to help.
Okay. This JetBlue guy, though, at one point he screamed, "Say your prayers." Now that would make that would make me shit a brick.
Oh, so this,
he's lost control. He goes, "Say your prayers," right. And it's like, what is this guy got something on him? Is he going to shoot somebody? Like,
you literally reach in your pants and say, "Here, hold this brick."
Yeah. No, because
I just shit this.
The one thing I hate about flying is that vulnerability. There's no way out. You're in that tube and you're done. And to have the pilot screaming, "Say your prayers." Jesus.
It's like the pilot's walking by, he looks at you and goes, this is bad. Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah. Goodbye. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'm terrified of flying. And ask Jason, I have trust issues. I just don't trust anybody. And that's why I'm frightened of flying. I don't mind the takeoff or the landing where most people get upset.
Right.
It's when you're in the air in flight, because I know that there's a normal person up front. He might be going through a messy divorce. He might be ready to call it quits. And I could go down because of him.
Right.
You know, and that's what enters my mind. And this is just a case in point.
Well, I mean, statistically, you know, the chances of your captain, your co-pilot going through something in the course of their, I mean, you know, it could happen to anybody, but
I know what you mean. So you have trust issues and you don't like Seasons in the Sun.
Yes, exactly. Maybe that's why.
Let's just add that to it. Okay, well, let's go. Kel, we've got a couple more minutes left.
HumbleAndFredRadio.com presents...
Fred's making a point with our accountant.
He is.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what that was.
New checks are in.
Excellent.
Oh, nice.
New checks.
Comic-Con?
Yeah, no, she just wanted to verify, and I said, I'm just, sort of occupied right now. But
it'd be so funny if it was HumbleAndFredRadio.com.
Oh, yeah.
It'd come again.
Johnny's a porno.
It's come and come again.
Should we tell that story?
Yeah, sometime. Not now, because we're just about done. We'll tell the story tomorrow about having John on our show yesterday. It was fascinating.
And the video he showed
us. After the show, he shows us a video, and we'll tell you what that video is on tomorrow's show.
Oh, okay.
I like that. Teaser for tomorrow's show. You must tune in.
Hey, you got to tune in.
Here's a video.
Man alive.
Anyway, go ahead.
Kelly?
Alicia Silverstone. Have you heard about how she feeds her 11-month-old son?
With the boob?
Like a baby bird.
Right, I heard this story.
She chews the food up first, and then she spits it into his mouth. She masticates the food for him. And then spits it in. And apparently, throughout history,
yeah, when we get to be our age, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing. Because we're tired. Could you chew this burger for me?
Yeah, well, this apparently isn't new. It's called kiss feeding, and it's occurred in most cultures across the planet. And it helps break down the food for a young child, especially during the weaning period.
Yeah, but when do you stop?
Yeah.
You know, good question. Like kids, like 4-year-olds in freaking diapers. Like at some point, guess what? Your ass is on the toilet, whether you like it or not.
Right.
Jesus.
I do understand, though, like the transition to solid foods, usually between 6 months and a year. You'd think, though, that you'd want them, you know, to get on their own.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Their own, the chewing.
Yeah.
Like, really.
But, you know, that's just the new generation. I mean, that's part of the whole bubble wrap thing.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's also overprotectionism. Yeah. It's, you know, but just...
It's like Europeans who, some Europeans will breastfeed their child until like 4 or 5 years
wedding.
Old.
Yeah,
at their wedding, the Italian mothers.
Yeah, exactly.
Take a little, have a little bit. Would you like a little,
But if the kid can actually ask you, it's time to take them out. Wean them
mother,
off,
you know? Could you put your breast in my mouth, mother?
Oh, mother, I'm a little bit peckish. Do you have some tit available?
Kelly, second story.
Mother, my new girlfriend, her nipples aren't as nice as yours, mother.
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 Oh, mother.
Listen to this mother of a story. Did you hear about the Brinks truck, which was near Sudbury? It crashed into a rock face on the Sila Highway. Both of the people driving the Brinks truck were really hurt. They're critically injured. But this truck dropped $3 to $5 million of loonies and toonies on the Trans-Canada Highway. And not only did that happen and they had to clean that up, but it also started a chain reaction of a couple of other trucks. One of them was a candy truck, which also dropped its load. Oh. What are the odds? Coins and candy. It's like a kid's biggest dream.
You know, one thing about that story I like is when they said 3 to 5 million. So there's like a gray area of about $2 million. Like,
funny.
Who on the scene right away cashed in?
Exactly.
Well, you know?
But your point is interesting. It's like there's these loonies, and then now there's candy.
Yeah.
And then there was another truck full of tits behind him. And it was like, five-year-olds. Candy, tits, mother, loony, mother.
You know,
mother.
That highway is big for tit runs. It really is.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's actually referred to as the tit run.
The tit run.
All right, Kelly. Yes.
This has been a HumbleAndFredRadio.com special news presentation.
Twas.
Oh, you are from hell.
Fuck, I just don't get this reaction. I can't imagine any song in the world that would give me that reaction.
This is nails down a chalkboard for me.
Well, I know, but yeah, I mean, I
you don't have to leave the room.
Yeah,
my God.
Don't get upset.
Oh, it's too much.
Listen, what a joy and a pleasure to broadcast on the internet.
We had joy. We had joy.
We had fun. Thanks to Mike Harris. Thanks to you nice people, Kinga, Kelly.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Petey. It was great to see Mike.
Mikey and Brian. Yeah, it was cool. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
On tomorrow's show.
Who's on tomorrow's show?
Greg Wired. Is he coming back already? Yeah. And tomorrow we'll tell you the story of the video that Johnny Saporno showed us. A lot of people just show you like, hey, here's a picture of me and my girlfriend on vacation. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just go look up the expression, make it rain on these hoes. That's all.
All right.
another super keen episode of the Humble and Fred Radio.com podcast has come to an end. Hey, but don't you worry, there'll be plenty more fun and frivolity coming right at you from Humble and Fredland real soon. So until then, be sure to clean behind those ears. This is Scary Bald-Headed and Feet saying a scoot-de-wop-wop, a scoot-de-wop-wop, boom, boom. Groovy.